On this week's episode, we take a deep dive into agronomy, altitude, flavor profiles, and fermentation with our guest, Jonas Fejereso, who is a licensed agronomist and licensed COB coffee grader. Vámonos! What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Guaranteed Fresh Podcast. On this week's episode, we have Jonas Fejereso, who is a licensed agronomist and a licensed COB coffee grader. Jonas, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Today is a great day.
Awesome. No, I appreciate it. Thanks for being here today. I'm so excited to get started with you. I mean, this is going to be an explosive episode. The cool part is, for all the listeners out there, we are actually going to do a special with Jonas. This is going to be episode one out of a special of two-part episode. So thank you for being willing to do that, Jonas.
Well, so great. You know I talk too much, so you need to split in two parts.
Oh, man. I love it. I think that I probably do more of the talking. We'll see. I don't know. We'll leave it up for everyone to vote listener-wise. But I appreciate you being here today. And for those of us who may not be familiar with you, who are tuning in and listening, could you just give us a little bit of your background, kind of who you are, and how you got into the game of coffee?
You know, my family is very bound to the coffee since I'm in the fourth generation in the coffee field. My great-great-parents came to Italy in 1919-something, and they start to work with coffee in the fields. My father is a farmer, too, so I was very interested in the coffee and all the stuff is involved with the coffee. So I got, when I got the 18, I go to the university and get my degree in agronomy. And since the first day I know I will work with coffee, it's something that is inside of me. And so I try to develop and understand all the coffee stuff with have involved with a coffee chain. So coffee is my life. It's 24 hours a day.
Oh, man. So I think I heard you correctly when you said you're fourth generation in the coffee industry?
Yeah. It's my great-great-great-parent is from 1890s is from more than 100 years. They came to Brazil and they start to work in the coffee fields. And since then, all my family is linked to the coffee farm.
Unbelievable. So fourth generation from Italy. Hey, we have that in common. And they came to Brazil. And what area are you located in Brazil?
I'm located in the São Paulo state. The city is in a region that's called São Paulo Water Region. And it's in Portuguese, it's Circuito das Águas Paulista. It's a nice place to live. I lived here from my whole life. And a lot of mountains, good weather. It's not too cold, not too hot. It's a nice place to grow coffee and to live to.
Amazing. I love it. Sounds inviting already. And by the way, I like the name of that city in Portuguese. It sounds way better than it does in English.
So Serra Negra.
Oh, man. I'll have to practice with that. Maybe I won't do it right now on the episode, but I'm going to work on that. I promise I will.
It's very cool. Black Hills in English.
Black Hills.
Yeah, because during the winter time, we have some dark clouds.
Okay.
That the mountains looks a kind of dark. So when the founders come to the city, they see the black mountains, and so they call Black Mountains or Black Hill.
I like it. That's cool, though. I mean, it already gives me like a scenic view. I can just imagine, you know, it's got like that quintessential South American, like just rolling mountains that just seem to go forever as far as the eye can see. Very cool. So you're a licensed agronomist. If you could explain that a little bit, what exactly is an agronomist and what exactly do you do with the farmers? How do you help them on a farm if you're an agronomist?
Yeah, an agronomist, it's everything that is linked to the field or something, like even stocks or warehouses or something that involves some animal or everything that come in the rural area. It's what the agronomist could work. So some agronomists work with orange, some work with grapes and so on. But I decided to work with coffee because I love coffee. So I help farmers in my job to grow coffee in a better way as possible, using the best technology in the more sustainable way. So we could produce food or a beverage or anything inside the farm without harming the environmental and being profitable, which is very important to the coffee farmer to earn money with their job. So I start thinking different about the coffee agronomy, because usually coffee agronomists or agronomists just think in the field, how to do with the field and how to grow coffee. But I usually go a little further, we say, outside of the farm gate. So I start to understand, to study how to cup, what baristas want in their coffee, what roasters like to have in their beans. So I help farmers to produce the coffee in a way that customers like what they desire. And it's a kind of different way to see the coffee, not just as a bean that someone, the farmer grow the coffee, produce the beans, and then we'll find a way to sell it. But the farmer don't know exactly what the customers, roasters want. So I try to help them to understand that and deliver a better bean for the market.
Wow, that's a lot right there. When I take a look at that, what I see is you're helping them on the field and off the field, so to speak.
Yeah.
My understanding is many farmers don't necessarily understand outside of the farm gate, as you mentioned. Maybe they work with a co-op, but they put a lot of trust into whoever's running the co-op. And sometimes, you know, that's good and they're helpful. And then there's other times where that's not necessarily the case. They don't always come forth with all of the information or some of the best pricing, things of this nature. So I think that's great that you're stepping up and you're also helping them see a difference, not just on the field, but also off of it, which I think is super important. And I believe that's one of the stepping stones that you need in today's current climate, because you can't just be on the farm. You got to think past the farm. And sometimes that doesn't always happen. And there's many reasons for this, as I'm sure you've seen. But I think it's great that you're doing that. One of the questions I have for you, with that being explained, is you mentioned you learned cupping and how to, you know, taste the differences with the flavoring and the flavor profiles. Now, my understanding is Brazil works a little different when it comes to the licensure of doing that. So you have the COB, which is your, I guess, professional organization, if we want to call it that, in Brazil. So could you maybe explain their role and how that works? Because it is a little different, right, than if somebody was a Q grader or something like that when it comes to cupping?
Yeah, the COB protocol, the cupping protocol, I even read an article about that. It's one of the oldest protocol of coffee cupping or coffee grading. First was just a coffee grading, but this protocol have more than 100 years, was developed in Brazil in the time Brazil was a monarchy before, it's a long time ago. So they developed this protocol to understand what the difference with the coffee. But the protocol was changing along the years. In the 1960s, the protocol had its final version, which is the one that I study and understand. The SCA protocol come a little bit after, I think in the 90s or 80s. Mm-hmm. And it's a very nice protocol too. I fully understand and sometimes use this protocol because worldwide is important protocol to understand the acidity and the body and aftertaste, and the numbers is really easy to understand for customers. If the coffee is 75, it's not as good as a 80 coffee. So the Brazilian protocol, we separate for a qualitative, not a quantitative characteristics. Sometimes we could see this protocol outside of Brazil. They separate in hard coffee, soft coffee, real coffee, and real zona coffee. It's five ways to separate the coffee by qualities, and each name have the coffee. For example, the coffee is called soft, have some characteristics, which are, for example, the coffee is very sweet, have no bad taste, and it's nice to drink, and things like that. So
I'm sorry. So there's no bitterness then if we were saying it was a soft coffee, just to make sure I understand correctly.
Exactly.
So it's a sweeter coffee, and there's no bitterness involved with it. And that's kind of how that works. That's one of those qualitative measurements that you
would measure.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I was following and that we all understood what that was. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And for example, the hard coffee, it's a coffee have some bitter taste from unripened coffee. So we say hard. So it's still very used in Brazil for commodities, because the COBE protocol, it's kind of easy to do in the daily routine in a warehouse than the SCA protocol, because SCA protocol is kind of complicated for a warehouse in Brazil, for example, that export tons and tons of coffees a day. So they still use the COB protocol in Brazil for exportation. It's the most used protocol in Brazil.
Okay, wow, that's a huge explanation. Thank you for unpacking that, explaining it. That really shines some light in that area. And if I'm not mistaken, I mean, Brazil, in terms of South America, you are the number one exporter. Your output is unbelievable when it comes to coffee. Another thing that I noticed is you have a lot of varieties, it seems like, when it comes to coffee varieties in Brazil. Offhand, roughly, do you know about how many varieties you have to date?
Yeah, if you put together Arabicas and Canéforas, which mm-hmm. are known as Robustas, we have more than 150 varieties.
150 varieties when you combine the Arabica and the Robusta.
Exactly.
Incredible. No wonder why you have so much output. That's a lot of varieties to keep track of. And what role does the Brazilian Institute, I forget the exact name, forgive me. I can't remember the name in Portuguese, but you have an institute, a coffee institute there in Brazil, that I remember reading one of your articles about, that you mentioned how they started classifications and also researched ways to help mitigate and try to eradicate the coffee rust that happened back there in the earlier, mid-2000s when that was going on. So could you just explain their role a little bit?
Yeah, in Brazil we have a very old institute with new research with a lot of crops, not just coffee. Business institute is called Agronomic Institute of Campinas, which is the city where the institute is located. It's very, very traditional. It was founded by the Peter Emperor in Brazil too.
Wow.
A long time, more than 100 years. So the emperor, the institute was founded in order to support the coffee in Brazil. 100 years ago, it's when the coffee started to grow world wild, and the emperor thinks that's important to start to study this crop and understand how to do it in a better way and help farmers. So after the years, the institute started to study another crops like corn, beans, and everything. But the most important area, in my opinion, is the coffee, because a lot of varieties of coffee were developed in this institute. And these varieties with, for example, leaf rust resistance, is very important to the farmers to reduce the use of chemicals in the field, which is good for the farmer and for the customer and for the environmental too.
Right.
So they do some research, a lot of research involved and put in the genetics of the plant, natural resistance to, for example, the coffee leaf rust or the leaf miner, and some worms that suck the coffee roots. So they do a very beautiful job to support the farmers in Brazil. And I do some work with them too in this farm which I'm located now. We do some experiments, some research, and because the farmer, the coffee chain is very dynamic, and we always have to bring something new to help the farmers in the field.
Yeah, I'm aware that you wrote several articles. I'll make sure I put the links in the show notes so everybody can catch up if they want to. They're great reads, a lot of great information. I mean, historically, I mean, you go so far back, about as far as you could origin-wise, at least in Brazil, which is I found fascinating. And the information that the institute that you just mentioned, they share that. They make that public information, right? That's my understanding.
Because as a government institute, so all the information is free. If some agronomist or some farmers want to search for this research, understand and find something that could be useful in their country, it's free. You just go there and read it and see if worth it for your place, your farm.
Yeah, my understanding is from that research that you talk about in that article, that information was greatly helpful. It also helped some neighboring countries like Colombia, for example, who's a neighboring country and also suffered greatly from the coffee rust issue that happened, many years ago. Moving forward, and now we understand about an agronomist, we understand some of the work that you do, some of the research, how you're able to help farmers. What role does the area, the location of the farm play in developing the coffee profile? What is the difference between like a low altitude type of farm versus a higher altitude farm. Could you explain how that affects the coffee and the plant itself?
Yeah, the altitude and the climate and the rain and the soil chemistry, everything changes the coffee profile when the roaster roasted that coffee or when the customer drink it. Each area have a different profile of because of this points like altitudes. The altitude play a main role in the coffee quality. There are a lot of studies worldwide about that, and it's because of the plant biology. You know, if in the low altitudes, usually the weather is hot. We have a little bit more rains usually, and that makes the plants grow faster and develop, and the beans, the berries, everything grow faster. So the plants do not have, let me say, enough time to build some chemicals inside the bean that could produce some interesting profiles in the coffee. When you have a high altitude coffee, the weather is kind of usually cold. We have in Brazil a little bit less rain. So the plant biology, the metabolism is a kind of slow down, and the tree have enough time to process and use these chemicals from the ground to develop a more interesting profile. The coffee is kind of more complex. Low altitude coffees don't mean the coffee is bad, but it's different. It's a little bit less complex than how altitude coffee beans.
And that's just a recap. That's mainly because of the metabolism of the plant. So exactly. If I understood you correctly, it's because when it's at a higher altitude, the plant kind of slows down on its growth a little bit. Not that it's stunning the growth, it just isn't as fast paced. It isn't as rapid. So yeah, because it slows down, it kind of takes its time, if you will. And because of that, that's what allows it to then develop more complex flavor profile and absorb, you said, some of the minerals and things of that nature around there.
Exactly.
Now, I understand that in certain locations in South America, there's volcanic ash from previous eruptions that, you know, may have happened a long time ago. My understanding is those minerals also play a role in those certain geographic locations where coffee may be grown. How does that add to the flavor as well? Does that add some other like form of complexity, or is it just because it's nutrient rich, or could you maybe explain that a little bit?
Yeah, in Brazil, we have some studies about the nutrients in the soil and how this molecule of the nutrients could affect the coffee quality. But we have not discovered yet a direct link with the molecule, but with the nutrients in the soil. For example, in a volcanic area, the soil is very fertile. So we have plenty of nutrients to the coffee tree to absorb and use in its metabolism. So that's why usually coffee in some areas like volcanic have a more complex flavor, because the soil have all the nutrients available for the plant, so the plant could take it and make it the right chemical that they needed to some process or something like that. It's very important to the coffee tree or for every kind of crop that the soil is well balanced. So
well balanced?
Yeah, well balanced.
So well balanced with the minerals in the soil. And now that's also including, that's inclusive at this point, if we're in volcanic type of soil, that's also inclusive if it's a lower altitude, right? Because if you think of a volcano, you know, it erupts, it goes everywhere, and, you know, obviously it's going to be on the side of the mountain and work its way down, but it's in that volcanic, rich, nutrient-based soil, it still would have that complexity versus if it wasn't in a nutrient-rich area at a low altitude.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, the nutrients in the soil usually are kind of molecules that are soluble. So sometimes the low altitude areas, like the bottom of a hill, for example, have more fertility than a top, because the nutrients with the rain are washed to the bottom side of the valley or something like that. And sometimes in the bottom, the soil is more fertile than in the top of the mountain.
I see what you're saying. So it does depend a bit geographically where you're located. But with everything that you just mentioned, generally speaking, higher altitude helps the plant more because it allows it to slow down just a little bit and be able to absorb more of those nutrients and those minerals that are around it. Is that accurate? Just want to make sure I got it right.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, that's really cool. You explained a lot with that. Now, one thing I would like to cover, which may be somewhat of what we call a myth, is if I were to take a fruit tree, a mango tree or something like that, and I were to plant it, you know, as close as I could to the coffee plant, that isn't going to have a direct impact on that coffee plant to where now the coffee that you're harvesting isn't going to taste like mangoes. That's not exactly how that works, is it?
Yeah, no, it's not. Because the put the plants together, it's not a way to give some kind of profile to the coffee, because they share the same ground, the same nutrients, but the coffee have a specific way to take the minerals from the ground in a specific molecule. And the molecule is kind of the same, no matter if it came from some mango substance, chemicals, for a banana, for example, the plant first take the chemical, then do some biological thing in the leaves and transform in another kind of substance, another kind of chemical. It's like the same if you eat banana, you not will look like banana or yellow or something like that.
Good point.
Yeah, so you don't, your body make that change to transform the substance, the chemical, in something that could be useful for you. So it's the same for the coffee tree, or if you put a mango tree or banana tree or any kind of tree, no matter what you do, the profile is something that happens in the complexity of the weather, soil, environmental, that make the coffee have this kind of proper profile.
They'll make their own substance, like you were saying, and they don't necessarily directly affect each other. I appreciate you going into that. I wanted to find that out from someone who was a licensed agronomist to make sure that we were on the right page, if you want to think of it that way. And that leads us really into developing the flavor profiles, which I know you have a hand in, you help with. So if we are not doing that in the field, so to speak, when we get to the fermentation process, then is that where we're able to then develop more with these flavors by adding in some of, like, maybe the fruits that you just mentioned, but doing it in this phase? Could you speak on that? Is that accurate?
Yeah, exactly. During the fermentation is the time that you could add some flavors in the coffee, no matter if you have a washed coffee or a natural. It's the time to add something, because the seeds with all the sugar around, which is naturally the pulp of the coffee, some small microorganisms, is the right word?
Microorganisms and microbes?
Yeah, Yeah, they do all the changing. They eat this sugar and some chemicals that they release near the coffee bean could affect the final flavor. And there is some studies in Brazil with the fermentation that they add some specific microorganisms to the coffee batch to give some kind of specific profile, like fruit or chocolate or acidity. So we develop this kind of, how can I say the word, I think it's yeast. Right?
Uh-huh.
Yeast to the batch to add this profile by human management, not naturally, because the coffee berry and the coffee bean have some natural yeasts around the pulp that live there, we say wild yeasts. So the researchers in Brazil take these yeasts and amplify it, in the lab they make grow the number to make a final product that you could go to the store and buy this kind of chocolate flavor or something like that, that you could add to the coffee batch and develop a kind of profile. This product is not already in the market. It's something for the next year, I think. But farmers are already doing their own experiments in the field, and they are adding very interesting flavors doing this controlled fermentation. And I cupped some coffee with very interesting flavors in Brazil, and it's something that is trend now in the coffee fields. A lot of farmers want to ferment their coffee after the harvest, which is not common in Brazil. Usually people know Brazil to have a natural coffee, not a washed or fermented. But now it's kind of trendy. A lot of farmers want to ferment their coffee, like Colombia.
Nice. Oh, I see where you're going with that. Well, you know, you figure you do things, the traditional way for so long, and then a new market opens up, and, you know, it makes sense to be able to realize being in that market a little bit. Doesn't mean you have to change everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's good, though, for Brazil. That's cool that they're also participating in that. To understand fully, you have different researchers, and they are able to take the different microorganisms and, I guess, put them in the fermentation. They do an experiment, and then they're able to, you know, kind of see what works and then figure out how to kind of amplify that or replicate it. So then that way, if I wanted to say I want a, you know, dark chocolate, you know, flavored coffee, that they would know the steps, the process roughly.
Yeah.
To get you in that direction. That way you're able to do that in the fermentation process, and you don't necessarily have to do that in the roasting. So how is that exactly different then? Because most of the time, if we think about, you know, coffee in this generation, like right now, as we're speaking in 2020, a lot of times that is actually what comes from the roaster. The roaster adds like their little specialty note on it and their little signature flavor. So how is the fermentation flavoring profile now different than the roasting? Could you still do the two? Like, could you go fermentation, add in the notes that you're talking about, and then take it to roasting and then add more of those notes? Or, I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, because some profiles of coffee, it's not hard to add in roasting. Like chocolate flavor is kind of way that you use the temperature, the way that you develop the roasting during the, for example, caramelization, Maillard reaction, and all that chemical stuff. But if you already have the chemical that you could give the roaster, the characteristic of chocolate, will be easier to add this in the coffee, in the batch. So some characteristics, for example, like dried fruit, it's kind of, I don't think there is a way that you could add this in the coffee profile during the roast, or some kind of specific acidity like lemon acidity or mango flavor, something that is intrinsic from the coffee, not something that you could add during the roast. This is interesting. One point that is, I think, for the fermentations in Brazil, is something that is to have a lot things that we need to understand to in the way that you could control this technology. But it's something interesting that you could help farmers in low altitude to add more complexity to the coffee, which they do not have spontaneous. So with the fermentation, you could add some flavors that the farmer never will reach using just the weather conditions. So in the kind of controlled fermentation, you could do that. It's very nice.
I see what you're saying. That's actually interesting, because now you're adding things in that may not organically anyway in the beginning have that flavor, but then you can add it later either in fermentation and or depending on what the flavor was in roasting. So they can kind of complement or balance each other.
Yeah.
I'm also guessing that some of the, you had mentioned some of like the fruity and floral type of flavors probably wouldn't work in the roasting phase, if you want to think of it that way. And I'm guessing it's because of the heat. I'm guessing that would probably, it would lose in the batch from, because, you know, you have heat over time to develop that profile, that those would be some of the things that would probably go after first crack is what I'm thinking. Is that accurate, or is that?
Yeah. Usually this kind of delicate flavors, we have to, the roaster have to be a very professional guy to roast the coffee in a proper way, because the chemical, in this chemical which give this delicate characteristics is very hard to work with this molecules, because the high temperature and time usually degradate the chemical, so you lose all the work that the farmer do in the field. So the roaster is a very important, that take a very important role in the coffee chain, because if the roaster are not a good roaster, we lose all the work that the farmer do in the field.
But that's where you come in, right? Because you are working with the farmer, you're helping them understand their farm, where they're located, soil. I know you had mentioned in a previous conversation we had before, soil testing and being able to, you know, see what might need to be added naturally, of course. I know you really try to stay away from fertilizers that, or pesticides, insecticides, things like that are not natural, that are chemical based. You're also helping them understand outside of the farm gate, kind of the business, where what people are looking for, the kind of popular flavors or styles that customers, not just in Brazil, but also globally speaking, are looking for. And then on top of that, you're also making sure that all that work that you were just doing to make sure in the fermentation process and in the area with the soil, that that's not lost once it goes to the roaster. You have a very important role, is what I'm understanding, because you're helping to balance this entire process and to create more of a cooperation, is what I would say, between the farmer and the roaster, to make sure that they're both working together and not necessarily, I don't want to say against each other, but not cooperating together. I don't think a roaster goes out of their way to intentionally lose flavor profile that came straight out of the crop. But they may be unaware of it. They may not understand that, hey, look, you got to be really delicate with this because of X, Y, and Z. So I'm seeing a very important role that you're adding. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing all that information. I think you've shined a ton of light on many things that take place at the farm level. And also just kind of like, I would call this like the modern day coffee farm, right? It's just, you're adding a lot of technology and a lot of things that traditionally farmers didn't have access to.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the fact that you're willing to come on here and explain those things with us. Moving forward, we're going into what we like to call the three shot espresso round.
The three shot espresso round.
Okay.
You ready to do this?
Yeah, I would try to.
Okay, no, it's easy, I promise. So in the three shot espresso round, I'm going to ask you three questions. They're also known as the three shots. Each question is multiple choice. You're just going to select the answer that best fits you. So here we go. Espresso shot number one. For your perfect cup of coffee, do you prefer AeroPress, Chemex, pour over, espresso, drip machine, or cold brew?
Pour over. I think it's
pour over.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. I could get down with that. Espresso shot number two. For your perfect cup, do you prefer light roast, medium roast, or dark roast?
Medium roast. I think the medium roast have all the stuff that I want in coffee. Some roasted flavor and some acidity. I love the medium roast.
I have that in common with you. You and me share the same on that one. I do like having both. Yeah. I like to taste what came from the roaster, and I also like to taste what came from the farm. That's I'm there with you on that one.
Great.
All right, and here we go for the third shot here in our three-shot espresso round. If you could, in this moment, would you have a whipped coffee, a cold brew coffee, or a hot coffee with an adult beverage, like whiskey or something like this?
I think three times the whiskey thing. In Brazil, we call Irish coffee.
Okay.
And it's kind of great. You know, I don't drink too much, just social, but this alcoholic flavor in the coffee sometimes is very great. I think it's the alcohol volatiles, right, with the coffee give an explosion of flavor in the mouth. It's kind of something that I appreciate sometimes.
I love your answer. Because you like it with alcohol, but your reasoning is one that I've never had on the show before. And you're spoken like a true agronomist. I really do appreciate that. I love it. So that's going to do it for our three-shot espresso round. And I very much appreciate you being on this episode with us. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way that they could do that?
Oh, I have Twitter account, LinkedIn account, and Instagram account too. I put all my work there in a different way. Each social media works in a different way. So the Instagram, I do diarily some posts in the farms that I visit or some work that I do. And LinkedIn, I do something more professional, talking about the things like we talk about fermentation, drying process, and something that could be useful for farmers and agronomists. And on Twitter, I do something mixed with the both of Instagram and LinkedIn. And my username, I use Jonas and Sachs because I used to be a musician. So I keep my roots on the saxophone thing. So you could find me as Jonas, my name, or Jonas and Sax, everything together.
Okay, so Jonas or Jonas and Sax, like saxophone. I'll make sure that we put those links in the show notes. Also, I'll be sure to include some of the articles that you wrote. They're a good read. I encourage everybody to jump in there, check them out. They're full of information, just chalked up with a ton of knowledge. Well, that's going to do it for us on this week's episode, which is episode one with you, Jonas. And I really appreciate you being on, and we'll see you on episode two.
For sure. There's a lot of things that we need to talk yet. And it will be great to do another episode and talk about coffee chain. You know, for me, coffee chain is everything. I do not just stay stuck in the field. I have to go outside and see everything. So we could talk a lot about almost everything in the coffee chain.
Oh, don't worry, my friend. We're going to talk lots about the coffee chain on the next episode. Well, Jonas, we appreciate it. Thanks for being on, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. It was a great show, and I hope all the listeners like it. And feel free to get in touch with me. It will be great to answer any kind of questions that people that are listening want to ask me.
Hey, listeners, it's Nat here. Thanks for taking time and listening to the show. If you believe there's someone who should be on the show, or maybe there's an area within the coffee industry that you'd like me to look into, feel free to drop me a line or put comments below. And as always, stay fresh.